The title that we gave to this retreat is The Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path in Zen. Yeah, why is Zen really looking at this differently? I think what we wanted to say is it is looking, we look at it from our experience with the meditation, which is our main pillar in this particular tradition. And most of you have been meditating for some time. Meditation is the pillar, and we have another pillar, which is the studying and awareness within the precepts. Now, the all of us, why do we come to some kind of spiritual practice? We come because we are kind of called. Something is calling us to look and to have our attention. And there's also some kind of longing, a longing to be a truthful, genuine being. And for all of us, we would, when we see we are just following some forms, even if there are social forms which certain groups of society appreciate, it's all fine, and we can do that with the right heart. We can also feel, I don't quite match. And then we start to, something starts to, I want to, I'm looking to be a genuine kind of true individual, a true person. So truth is, I think, something most of us have high up in our priorities. And Buddhism obviously is not the only it is one of the spiritual entrances, gateways to truth. And I think probably people without any formal spiritual path may also feel this calling to truth, and they may have their own way to steer to it, to follow its beckoning. And there may be people who don't hear this call very strongly and wander about in what we call the realm of not knowing, of the realm of suffering and dis-ease. Now, so if we have this word truth, this calling to truth, then we have the question, well, is this one thing? Is truth one thing? If it is the highest kind of calling we experience, where does it fit in our lives? And I think for, if we look with the eyes of Zen, then we always say, well, truth is here. If it isn't here, and if it isn't now, where could you find, where could you find it? So as we are sitting here, for all of us, truth is here. And we may just have had a row with somebody, or we may have a very lovely talk with somebody, and we may have had problems, we may be dying, we may have all kinds of things, but it doesn't matter actually at this point. Together with all those things that are part of us, the truth is here. And so as such, you can actually not divide it up, can you? If this here Yeah, me, us, here. It's true. It's something you cannot divide. And there's aspects to it. And I would like to look at some aspects of it, which the Buddha Shakyamuni has brought forward. But I would like you to keep in mind throughout this talk that truth is just one thing, and it is here, and it is now. Because then you understand better why we say the Four Noble Truths in Zen. And it is actually what Shakyamuni intended, although this whole word of Zen did not exist at the time, although you had dhyana, that was the word for meditation, and that is what he practiced, and where these observations, which they actually are, came forth from. And so let's just look at the first aspect, which we can all verify for ourselves, and that is the truth of dukkha. Now, I have purposely not translated it, because then I make a choice. And there are various ways of translating this. It has been translated as suffering, which is a bit of a confusing for people if you say, well, you know, suffering exists. Well, people don't quite know what do we mean. Does some people suffering and others aren't? No, this means that the fundamental aspect of human life, there is dis-ease for all of us. There is dis-ease, there is unsatisfactoriness. And one of the actual meanings of dukkha is contraction. Now, if you feel your body and your muscles, you do know contraction. You feel tension. Tension is contraction. And many of us have this tension in the solar plexus, or the heart region, or the abdomen. Yeah, we have this tension. And a contraction. And why does that happen? Why do we do that? We don't actually think we do that. Do we do that? I don't do purposely, and yet it happens. It happens. So there is something unconscious about this, and the path of training is making the unconscious just naturally become aware. But we can't deny that we do have this contraction. Now, about the causes of it, we will speak later. Why does this happen? Well, one of the explanations that is given in Buddhism is there is a cause of this, and it is generally called grasping. Grasping. Yeah? So the cause of our dis-ease in life, or unsatisfactoriness, and just that we're just not happy and peaceful, is that we are grasping. Now, when we think of grasping, we often think of getting something substantial, going after things. And you can see it around in the world all the time. with all the lotteries and competitions and whatever we have in order to get things. Yeah, we want to get things. And that is one thing that unconsciously happens, and is of course because of advertising and whatever, we are encouraged to actually grasp. Yeah, we are encouraged to go and grasp. But we do feel, we do feel unhappy about that, and we don't actually feel at ease with it. And that is what brings people to a more contemplative life. Well, it makes you think, if we then don't want all those external ways to satisfy something, what is it we do want? And what is it we really do want? And everybody has these questions. But what it is that we do want isn't so, that cannot be grasped. We cannot grasp it. We know there is something we do want. But we, with our will and with our control, we can't actually reach it. And so we start to sit down and reflect and be still and let that question of what do I want grow. It is giving space to this question. And when you give space to the question, it means you're at that point not holding on, and you're not grasping after something external. And also not something in yourself. Because we can easily say, oh, I don't particularly want all this luxury and all this materialistic stuff around. But even if we don't go after that anymore, we may still not feel satisfied. There's often something else we still want. And that is a wanting from, for example, human beings. When we relate to each other, there may be things we want, and there may be things we actually detest. So there is this continuous flux of holding on and trying to get something, and also of resistance in our interaction. And maybe when you just sit in a retreat and you don't know each other so well, we don't notice that much in our relationships. But I'm sure that all of you know about this in the relationships with those who are closer to you, in your family, in your work situation, with friends. And you get this mechanism. What do you want? Most of us want to be loved. We want to be loved. And we want to laugh also, but we want to be appreciated. And often we want to be approved of. And we don't really want to be put aside, ignored. We don't want to be denied. We don't want to be the focus of anger or shout at, something we find very unpleasant. Yeah, but so what we actually want, we do want love. And, well, is that grasping? Well, I think if everybody needs to discover that for themselves, what happens in your body when you are in a situation where you do not get what you want and people are not so approving, or there might be people straight criticizing you? What happens? Contraction. Yeah. And same true, that it is resistance there. Yeah, contraction out of resistance. Same true if you're in a group of people and you feel you don't connect and you really would like some attention. What do you feel happening actually in the you? There is something that wants to reach out for something that isn't there. So we feel it is a contraction of the heart, of the hara. And that, when there is that contraction, then what is naturally already present in us cannot shine. It cannot manifest. It's there. Our true nature is there all the time, but we seem to obscure it because of our, and Shakyamuni says, grasping. Because of our grasping. And also, when you are, for example, having a very lovely few years in which you may have met a new partner, or it goes good at work, and you say, "Well, I really do feel quite happy at the moment." Then suddenly things can change for you. It can be either the Eurozone going down with the value of money going down totally, or we are all finite. All of us can have accidents, can get ill. Our work situation hasn't been good at the moment. Many people go without jobs. So change is very very clear to us at the moment, that there are actually no external conditions that make us happy, that we can hold on to it, because there must be just one person who has something else in mind, and it already is, your situation is affected. And so we really cannot hold on to satisfying external conditions. So it makes holding on to happiness based on conditions rather useless. Yeah. Now, the third aspect of this truth is that there actually is an end to this suffering. And that means to say, there is no unsatisfactoriness. There is actually peace possible. And there is the possibility of non-contraction exists. Now, the way that we train in order to discover this truth is called the Eightfold Path, the Noble Eightfold Path. And the interesting thing is that because these are all one truth, how does this match the fact, the first aspect of there is suffering, and the third aspect of there is no suffering? How does that match? Because they seem to be two things. That is the path of training. In the path of training, we will see, we will discover that these two are actually not contradictory, but that within the basic dis-ease, ease can be found. And that it isn't necessarily something that you find tomorrow. Because we started off sitting here together now in this moment. And all of this truth is present now in this moment. So all of us here have this moment of dis-ease where there is at the same time this moment of no suffering. And this is sounds like a puzzle. And the only way to so-called grasp this to study oneself and the Eightfold Path as it is described, which comprises meditation, which is an activity in which we do not purposely divide things. There is a natural flow from moment to moment. And so we don't hold on to one moment and push the other one away, although we might, but then it is we try to be aware. And the other aspect is studying what we think, or what we say, and what we do in life, because those are the main three actions that come up in life. Now, so in a way, this Eightfold Path that leads to the end of suffering, if you look at real time and historic time, it is a progression in the sense that you can say, well, and I can say, definitely I'm not the same person as after having practiced as when I started. And so it is a progression. It gives you another sense of what reality is. And so there will be a change tomorrow, the day after, and the next year in how you perceive yourself to be and how you see the world. And at the same time, if you are going to say, well, I need to practice hard because next year I need to see the world definitely more in a bright way than we may not quite look at this moment. So you look ahead for your happiness rather than trusting it is actually with us now. Now this path there is no suffering aspect, the third noble truth. You may all have some kind of intuition that is so. And I think probably that is what brings you to retreats and brings you to sit down and meditate or do whatever spiritual practice you would like, you know, it suits you. And but then I'm not able to go and give you proof in the sense that I'm going to say a few lines of words and say it's true. Because it is not that type of truth, it is your experience and this intuition that is deeply present will become more on the foreground. At the moment, maybe all kind of details of daily life may be on the foreground in your mind. And you still, you at times you hear this intuition call. But this intuition can sometimes just take up the space in your mind. And so that is what you call verification. Yeah, that is you realize that is true. That third noble truth is true. The Noble Eightfold Path, a few notes. We think of a path of taking steps and one step first and then the next step and then the next step. It's not quite that way. All these steps, they go together. And they go together because we are one being and we are living now. And these various aspects that I will touch upon are not separate things, but very integrated. Yeah, they're all entangled, and they don't need to be seen separately. But at times, it is very useful to look at them separately. The Noble Eightfold Path is one way of looking at what we call the precepts in the Soto Zen or Serene Reflection Meditation tradition. And I would like to say something about the precepts tomorrow I'll explain that to you tomorrow, why that is. And I'd like to start with speaking with you about the Eightfold Path. Because it's quite intriguing. It starts, the first aspect is right understanding, clear understanding. And the whole life, a whole peaceful, happy, and fruitful life starts with clear understanding. And so what could or would that be? what would one need to understand? It is not an understanding, you may see that you can neatly write down in lines this thought, that thought, based on brain activity. It is not an understanding that is depending on your intellectual faculty, although your intellectual faculty is connected with it. You don't need to be knowledgeable or clever. We don't speak or explain right understanding in terms of kind of book explanations, but still, we have to understand with our whole being, with your body and mind, body and mind. So that brings you back to the one truth of this moment. We understand with body and mind. And so your meditation and awareness of body and mind and the conditions, of course, that we are finding ourselves in. So to understand those, the understanding is the answer to questions like, who am I? What is a human being? And then, of course, when you think of a human being, you think of all of us. But then when you think, who am I? The question is important if you don't try to give an intellectual answer. Because the question already opens your mind. And the importance of working with questions is that it opens the way you think. So when you have a question, you cannot have a statement. And we are freeing up statements. No statements. Things just as they are. But in order to see how things are, we need to actually ask and look how things are. And together with the question of who am I is what is the world? What is this universe? And not as Einstein with explanations, but from your experience. It's all about experience. How do we experience life? How do I experience myself and my fellow beings and the conditions in which I find myself? And then as you saw, things change. And we are present here, this moment. And if you, now I touch again upon we are here all together this moment. It's not the same moment as when I said it before. We have slightly different, even physical way of sitting. We have together thought of something. It's not the same moment. And so each moment really has a uniqueness that can never be repeated. And yet, it's not different either, is it? And so this, if you keep this in mind together with this one truth, what we are studying in Buddhism a lot is that things are different and things are also the same. There is a similarity, but what is it? And also it's different. So this moment, it's the same kind of moment. It's also a different moment. And this is not on the level of thought. This is on the level of experience. Now, the other aspect of understanding is that really all kinds of things can be. Yeah, all kinds of things within in time, change, all kinds of things can be. All kinds of things can happen. And how is that? There is space for everything that happens, but we wouldn't want everything that happens to happen. And there the mind comes in, the self, which cannot accept. So the whole understanding aspect is how am I? How is the world? How do we relate? Are we different people? Are we same, similar people? Yeah, not in character, but we are beings. And a deep understanding of this. The fact that we are individuals with personal desires and wantings, and that we share being with all beings. And to understand that in depth means that we are no strangers to each other. We may not know each other, but there is something deeply familiar as well. And now the path starts with understanding, and then it speaks about thought. The next one is right thought. Now, this is interesting because many of us think that understanding begins with thought. That isn't quite so. Our thought comes forth from our understanding. And thought and feeling are very connected. So I've always wondered why it was right thought that right feeling feels in there, fits in there straight away. But I think I have spoken enough for now, and tomorrow we will touch upon a bit more practical entrance of training in that we can speak about clear thinking, about right action and livelihood. And meditation and mindfulness are also part of this Eightfold Path. We have spoken at length about meditation the previous retreat, and we will still touch upon it, but tomorrow, or we can maybe speak about working with the precepts and the other aspects of the path, like speech and action. Speech based on and coming from our thoughts, and our action expressing also our understanding. And then we have the aspect of livelihood, of what we practice and in daily life, and how do we relate to human beings in our daily activity. But this is the basis, and I would suggest we still have a few minutes for some questions, because it is maybe it is a deep stuff.